the Yadim in Bereishis, and especially the transition between Bnei Noach and the Avos. And I think the last thing that we discussed was Parshas Chayisara, so we're a little behind. So Parshas Chayisara, we discussed the acquisition of the Maris of Achpela, as I recall. I don't know if I mentioned it then, but regarding the Maris of Achpela, and we tried to integrate it into Kicha Kicha Misteafer. I don't know if I remember mentioned it then or not, but if I didn't, I'll just mention it now quickly. And that is that Rabbeinu Yonah's view in Avos is that the last of the Nisyonos of Avram Avinu was actually the acquisition of the Maharas HaMachpela. Again, I'm not sure if I said it that. The traditional view, of course, embraced by almost all the Mefarshim and Midrashim and so on, is that the Akedah was the ultimate test of Avram Avinu. And of course, you can't imagine, a better culmination or climax of testing Avram Avinu's faith, the depth of it and the motivation behind it, the Ate Dati Kirei Elokim Ata, which is why it's so striking that Rabbeinu Yonah would have this different view, that the acquisition of the Maris HaMachpela, but I think both in terms of the different things that we've discussed in general between the momentary capacity to rise to the occasion and to respond to a particular challenge, as opposed to dealing with things in a more consistent and enduring way, kind of the nitty gritty of life. Talk often about the fact that the really two dinim of Kiddush Hashem. One, of course, is there are more than two, really, but broadly speaking, one, of course, is captured very dramatically by the Gimel Averos, the Harg Vayabors of Gilei Arayos, Shvichas Damim of Avodah Zarah. The other one is the daily Kiddush Hashem that the Gemara speaks about in the end of the first one is spoken about in Sanhedrin, Abayin Dalet, and we also have Shas Hashman and Parhesia. The second one is one the Gemara speaks about in the end of Yuma, when the Gemara speaks about, Avihavtas Hashem Elokecha, Shehei Shem Shemayim Mis'ahei Val Yadecha, and the idea that, people who speak Benachas Imabrios, and they pay their bills on time, and they conduct themselves in a manner which brings honor to Torah and to Klal Yisrael and to the Rabbonu Shel Olam, that reflects the difference between Klal Yisrael and everybody else. Baruch Elokeinu Shebaranu Lechvodo, including Bnei Noach, as wonderful as they might be, but structurally at least, that such people are Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, Shehei Shem Shemayim Nesai Vayedecha. So it's fascinating, because if you look at the Rambam, begins Parakei Hochos Yisodei Torah with the phrase Kol Beis Yisrael. It's also a very unusual formulation. Kol Beis Yisrael, right? Mitzuvin al Kiddush Hashem, and the Rambam discusses, the dinim of Anos, and then by extension the dinim of Pikuach Nefesh, it's a sugya in Sanhedrin and a sugya in Psachim. Even then, it's interesting to note that the first time the Rambam mentions Kiddush Hashem, he doesn't speak about it in the context of Yoharig Val Yavor, but of Yavor Val Yehoreg. Is quite interesting too. V'chai bahem, v'loshi yamus bahem, for the Rambam is actually a kiyum in Kiddush Hashem. But the whole parak is dedicated and starts with that, Kol Beis Yisrael. But the parak ends by quoting the Gemara in Yoma about Shehei Shem Shemayim Asayim Vayadacha. And there the Rambam says that, Talmid Chachamim, people who establish themselves in a very special way as ambassadors of Torah, they're Mekadesh Shem Shemayim in this way of being Mis'ahei Val Yadecha. So I just always thought that it was very fascinating. Intuitively, instinctively, we would have thought the opposite. We would have thought that the ones who are capable of making these, charismatic sacrifices are the Talmid Chachamim, the Tzadikim, the ability to make that ultimate sacrifice, to speak nicely, to deal, honestly, consistently, to behave in a fashion, that Shem Shemayim Messiah Bayadecha, that's something anybody can do. And of course, that seifa at least is true. Anybody can do it and everybody is obligated to do it. But the Rambam, obviously, based a little bit on the Gemara, but based on the Gemara, you didn't have to codify it specifically, you know, with respect to, you know, Anshei Maisa and Talmidei Chachamim. But both the obligation is greater, and the temptation in some respects to cut corners can also be greater. Called Gadol Mechaver Yitzro Gadol Eimenu. But even more than that, I think the Rambam is basically reflecting the idea that sustained, mundane, consistent Kiddush Hashem is really actually much more difficult to pull off than you know, than that momentary rising to the occasion. In that sense, you know, the acquisition of the Maris HaMachpelah, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, was the last of the Nisyonos. The Akedah was a very heady moment, you know, and we talked a little bit about in the past about, you know, Yitzchak being a child of the Akedah, being defined by the Akedah. But the bigger, the Sayon, you know, in some respect, is Avram Avinu, for whom it's Vayhi Achar Advar Mo'ela, Vayhi Achar Advar Mo'ela. It's just another episode. It's an episode which is Mora, Umochiach, who he is, Ato Yadati Kirei Elokim Ata. Without that episode, you know, the legacy of Klal Yisrael would be missing. That's also the way that Reb Chaim Mivolozhin in his Perush on Avos, you know, he talks about why the Doros from Adam to Noach are formulated differently than Noach, you know, to Avram, so on. Anyways, in his whole discussion there, he makes the point that, you know, Avram Avinu's capacity to rise to the occasion of the Akedah really had like almost like a spiritual DNA, you know, impact on his children, on his progeny. So there's certainly that aspect of it, but in the bigger picture of Avraham Avinu's life, we'll talk more about this. In the bigger picture of Avraham Avinu's life, it's Vayhi Achar Dvar Ma'ela, Vayhi Achar Dvar Ma'ela. And he went on to the next thing, and this was something that you know, that was a very critical episode, but by no means the defining one, contrast to Yitzchak. And what he went on to, beyond, you know, visiting, you know, Utz and all that, in the next parsha is Misas Sarah, and the acquisition of the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, and having to deal with, you know, the machinations of, you know, Ephron Achiti, and, you know, to be able to, you know how to behave when somebody kind of singles you out, even though they might have done it sincerely and they might have done it cynically. It's hard to know. As the Nesi Elokim Atab Sochenu, but, you know, to know that requires of you, you know, that you take, you know, that you spend, you know, over kesef, over la socher, and that everything be done, you know, in a transparent way, that there be no shemetz or safek of any kind of, you know, favoritism or wrongdoing, you know, that you're behavior be the alame aver lifnim b'shura sadin, and so on. And to do that as you're mourning the loss of someone who obviously was so dear to him and defined his own life. That's a tremendous nisayon, how a person behaves, you know, in the time of Evel, you know, Bakaso, Bakiso, Bakoso. Chazal tell us that when people are in a state of pressure, you know, when it's not the norm, the norm is a test of character. It's the ultimate test of character. But of course, you know, pressure, times of pressure, you know, highlight people's priorities. Avraham Avinu, you know, the Maris HaMachpelah was both. It was the shigra in a way, because it was a very mundane thing. On the other hand, he had to pull it off as a legacy for Klal Yisrael, for all the reasons that we discussed in Kikam Bistei Ephron, all the symbolic value of the Maris HaMachpelah, and he had to do it at a time when he was personally in a state of crisis and angst, and you know, with a bond that he shared with another human being, most, you know, intimate bond that he could share, you know, had just been taken from him. So in that respect, I think Rabbeinu Yonah's, from all those overlapping reasons, Rabbeinu Yonah's idea that the ultimate nisayon, you know, was not the Akedah, but the acquisition of the Maris HaMachpelah, is something that is very important. Anyway, that's what we discussed last time. So I wanted to move on again and try to catch up a little bit, is to speak a little bit about Parshas Toldos, and of course Vayetze, which we just read. And of course, that is the story in Toldos, is the struggle between two stories, really, Yaakov and Esav, on the bracho, on the Bechorah and on the Brachos. And of course, the behavior of Yaakov, which comes into question, which we'll have to discuss. As well as, again, reinforcing the idea that Yitzchak Avinu, right, really is different from the other Avos. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, we're all enriched by having had multiple role models and exemplars. Elohar Avram Kare Yitzchak, Elohar Yitzchak Kare Yaakov. Their circumstances are different. Avram Avinu, you know, finds the Rabbon Shalom and creates a religion. And, you know, Avram Megayeris Hanashim, that's, you know, Sarah Megayeris Hanashim, Nefesh Asher Asa B'Charan. And he's able to pull off a double Lech Lecha, right? Lech Lecha Mi'artzecha, Mi'molardecha, Mi'beisavicha. So I think always refers to a cultural a challenge. He's able to, you know, to leave not only what is familiar to him in terms of family ties and the emotional aspect, but everything that he knows, his entire cultural matrix, really is something that he has to give up and to adopt something very different. He too has two Lech Lecha. He has a Lech Lecha Be'artzecha, Mi'molardecha, Mi'beisavicha, a triple cultural sacrifice, in a way, or at least a triple cultural transformation. And for, you know, what will be revealed to him, Ela Aretz Asher Areka, but a different destiny. He has to embrace a different destiny. And then later on, he has the Akedah, Lech Lecha El Hara Moriah. That's what Chazal discussed, which one, what is the relationship between the two, and which one was a greater challenge. So, like I said a second ago, you would have thought that it would be a, you know, hands down clear answer to that question. You know, Lech Lecha Mi'artzecha is, you know, there's a lot of nostalgia involved, and there's moving expenses, and sure, there's, you know, emotional trauma leaving everything that you know. But, you know, how can you compare that to the other Lech Lecha, Bincha, Yichidcha, Asher Ahavta? Obviously, the dream and the destiny all bound, you know, with this child that he finally had, and the, you know, the quest to fulfill Ritzon Hashem, to surrender his will, not just to comply, but to do so by Yashkem Avram Baboker, you know, Abba Mekalkelis Asashura, to do so enthusiastically, ad kedekach, that, like, he's almost disappointed when he can't do it, you know, not really, but in some respect. So how could you compare the two? But giving up your cultural foundation, you know, or spending a life, you know, swimming against the tide, is in a way a much more difficult task than even the heady capacity to come up, you know, with a single gesture, a charismatic gesture. So the life of Avraham Avinu is really a very dialectical life. It's vayhi achar dvarim, vayhi achar dvarim. It's lech lecha and lech lecha. It's all of these things. He, you know, he experiences so much, and we'll see that that's really kind of what Yaakov has to get back in touch with as well. The Parshas Toldos really revolves around Yitzchak, who's such a different personality. He's really an Akedah person. His blindness is from the Akedah. His, you know, maybe symbolically from the Akedah. Chazal say physically from the Akedah. He doesn't attend his mother's funeral, according to some views in Chazal, because he's, you know, hanging around Hara Moriah at the Akedah, right? He only returns to, you know, provide another wife to replace his mother for his father. Imagine how difficult, how almost torturous that can be for any child, and especially for a Yitzchak, you know, who had such a close relationship with his mother, the Ben Skunim, and then somebody who's, you know, 3 years later doesn't experience Nekama, according to Chazal, right, until Rivka enters the Ohel. That's the midah of Yitzchak, is the midah of Gevura, and it's the midah of the Akedah. And that, of course, is a critical aspect of what the Avos bequeath to us, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Yitzchak is not the Bechira Avos. In some respects, he's the middle of Os, but his legacy is still amazing. And every one of us needs the legacy of every one of the Avos, and that's why in Shemon Esrei, three times a day, it's Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzhak, Elokei Yaakov, and different parts of our personality are drawn from each, and different moments in our lives. We call on, you know, different aspects. That's why it's important to understand Ma'is Avosim and Lamanim, you know, what the Avos really were all about. It's fascinating, though, that when we ultimately meet up with, I'm going to get back to the Toldos part in a second, but so that Yitzchak is really, I say, a product of the Akedah, that's part of his legacy, and of course that's you know, the positive of what he bequeaths, but at the same time it comes with a certain drawback, certain myopia, certain blindness, right, in the assessment of his children. And, you know, possibly that's what attracts him, you know, to Esav as opposed to Yaakov, because he sees in him, you know, that kind of a potentially charismatic, with all of his flaws and problems, he's still a bigger than life, you know, kind of a person who's capable of, you know, extraordinary gestures. You know, he's born with this red shock of hair, asui, you know, much more mature than he should be. Everything he does, you know, is, you know, off the scales of normal. You know, if he's hungry, he's, you know, hinei anochi aleich lamus. You know, everything is, he has the potential, you know, to be that kind of a charismatic, you know, Akedah-type personality, whereas Yaakov is an ishtam, a yoshev aholim, you know, somebody who, you know, is substantively investing in his own future as an Oved Hashem, but he's not necessarily making so much noise, a bit of a nechba, Ela Kalim. And in a sense, this is partially responsible for, you know, the different assessments of Yitzchak and Rivka to their children. And again, a lot of discussion in the Midrashim and Farshim, how, you know, far off Yitzchak was in his assessment of Esav and Yaakov. The more, you know, he misunderstood them in a way, the more everything I'm saying is true in one respect. And if he really understood the good qualities of Yaakov and even Yaakov's superiority to Esav, in a way, that's even a stronger reason to think that, you know, his Akedah experience is one which shaped him to such an extent that he, notwithstanding knowing, like if he didn't know, it's one chiddush, and if he did know, it's another chiddush. He knew, and yet, you know, this capacity of Esav was something that, you know, really drew him to Esav. And then, you know, all of that is true until kind of the point of Vayacharad Charada Gedola, when Yaakov and Esav do something that rocks his, you know, world view of who they are, and maybe also of, you know, where to put the Akedah in the bigger scheme of things, and maybe the relationship between the Maras HaMachpelah and the Akedah, or Vayihi Acharei, or Lech Lecha and Lech Lecha, and that's when things change. But it's therefore very interesting that, you know, Yaakov himself is forced to change, you know, in that context. Yaakov himself, in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, Torah tells us that, you know, Vayetze Yaakov, Yelech Harana, and we know that that's something that caught Chazal's eye, that repetition, the Yitzia and the Halicha. Different things are said about it. Chazal say that, you know, Yaakov, mi Be'er Sheva, didn't want to leave Be'er Sheva because he saw himself in the image of his father, the Ola Tamima, who couldn't leave Eretz Yisrael, right? The Akedah, you know, persona, again, that ideal Gevura idealist who can't even, if he wants to, compromise his standards. So he's mispalel in Be'er Sheva, like, you know, what should he do? On the one hand, he's being told to leave. His mother tells him to leave. His father endorses that he should, but this is not who he thinks that he is or wants to be. And it's very, very telling, therefore, I think, my suggestion, as far as I know, Vayifka b'makom. So again, Chazal tell us that, you know, Vayifka, Often, some of the Mefarshim say here Al Atar, the Sfarno, Barbanel, and others. Ibn Ezra hints at it. Vayifka means when you bump into something unintentionally. Right? It's not part of the plan. So it's Vayifka Bamakom Vayolan Sham Kiva Shemesh, and so on. And Chazal tell us that Bamakom was Har Hamoria. Hamakom Ahu. Vayifka Bamakom Ahu. And they connect it to the Akedah. But what's particularly fascinating, this is what I'm trying to say, is that already, you see already the different destiny of Yaakov and Yitzchak. Because for Yitzchak, again, Bamakom Ahu, that was the place that defined him. That's the place where he developed his relationship with his father, Avi, Bini, Avi. They don't have any father-son bonding time in the narrative anyway, in the psukim, in the Mikra Mefurash, which we know is very important, right? And Torah Shebichsav itself, aside from the Akedah, that's where they become, father and son, in a way. I always like to say, Ela told us Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram olidus Yitzchak. Now Rashi says that we should also emphasize Avraham olidus Yitzchak. That Yitzchak was born when Avraham was Avraham, not when he was Avram, meaning when he was older. But I think it's more than that. It's what I was saying before. In other words, his experience with his father is through the Akedah. He didn't experience his father when he was, dealing with Terach or Lot, or negotiating for Stone, or intervening on behalf of Lot. All the things that look like compromises in the life of Avraham Avinu, but are really part of his incredibly comprehensive Avodas Hashem. Which Ate Adati Kirei Elokim Ata, which is only reinforced afterwards, is all being a kiyum in his Avodas Hashem itself. It's not, when he's Makabel, when he's a Machnes Orchim, at the expense of being Makabel, Pnei Hashkina, you could think, that he's sacrificing Kvod Shemayim for Kvod Adam, or Ben Adam Lamakom for Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. Ate Adati Kirei Elokim just shows what always is true, and that is that too is a kiyum in Kabbalah's Pnei Hashchina. It's Ezu Derech Sheyavar Lo Ha'adam, Teferes Lo Osemet, Teferes Lo, Min Ha'adam. That's who Avraham Avinu really was. But Yitzchak, really bonded with him in the Akedah. And it took a long time for him to understand, that Avraham had a career before and a career after, Vayhi Achar Advar Ma'elev, that he did all these things that, could look a little sketchy, if you took them out of context of the whole person, if you weren't looking, having done his kol ha'adam l'kavzchus, then you could think that Avraham Avinu made a lot of concessions and a lot of compromises. Why was he advocating for stomp, which were Rala Adam and Rala Mokom? And why was he bending backwards Lot when Lot was stealing from the local people? And, was an achzari person in some respects, in terms of his later behavior. Even when he's machnas archem, he's grotesque hachnasas archem. And so on. So, without knowing, or without focusing on Avraham when he was Avram, Eil told us Yitzchak ben Avraham, but I think the point is that Yitzchak is very much an Akedah person and the son of his image of his father, of Avraham Avinu. That's my take on it. So what's fascinating is that, Yaakov, in a way, sees himself as an extension of his father. Right? This is all what Masorah is about. Right? You always have that initial default loyalty and perspective, and that serves you very well. At a certain point, you have to know that there are other paradigms, and you have to know how to integrate them, and then you have to find your nofech mishalo. That's what happened all the way back in the beginning of Jewish history with every one of the avos, because, again, Avraham founded the religion. Yitzchak was the Ola Tamima, because he was the first natural-born Jew, and therefore there had to be a certain idealism established and a certain rigidity, but also charisma and gevura. For the first Jew. And then what was Yaakov's destiny going to be? So it's just very fascinating that in a way he starts off both as the opposite of his father and as a clone of his father. In his image, certainly a clone of his father. And even the tamimus and the single-mindedness is part of that, unlike Esau. But in a much quieter fashion, because he's not called upon to say, Kofseni Abba Yafa, Kofseni Yafa. But then, it's particularly striking that once he leaves his father's home, and again, he doesn't want to go, he's reluctant, he's ambivalent, he's being mispalo that he shouldn't have to do that. So, Vayetze Yaakov Miber Sheva Vayele Charana, Vayifka Bamokom, his connection, Vayolan Shom Kiva Shemesh, back in Har HaMoriah. But again, for Yitzchak, it never went away. He was always, you know, he was always either at Har HaMoriah or Har HaMoriah was always with him. There was never a Vayifka moment, I'm guessing, for Yitzchak. But for Yaakov Avinu, right, in the throes of being concerned, being almost panicking about how, you know, his destiny might be different and questioning whether that was so or not, it's kind of encapsulated by, on the one hand, being back in the same place, the sense of continuity, but being there, you know, unintentionally. It almost has to be thrust upon him. Vayifka b'makom vayolen sham kiva ha-shemesh. And then we're told that vayishka b'makom ahu, right? And only then when he wakes up, he says, achen yesh Elokim b'makom hazeh v'anochi lo yadati, different views of Chazal. And of course, he has the dream of vayachalom b'hinei sulam v'tzavartza v'rosha magia shamayma and malach Elokim olim v'yordim bo, which many understand to be, again, some sort of a fusion, you know, between, you know, living in the real world and living in the ideal world, right? Between Chesed and Gevura, right? Sulam, which is Mutzav Arza Barosha Magia Shamaima, and Malachi Alekim are Olam Yardim. There's continuity. There's a way to get from one to the other. You don't have to choose one instead of the other. Bine Hashem Nitzav Alav. But before he gets there, or after he gets there, I'll just add, it's also very fascinating that, again, his reaction, Mandora Mokom Hazeh, Inze Kim Beis Elokim, V'Zashar Shamayim, you know, he's just shocked that, you know, you could have a Vayifka for Har HaMoriah, that you could be there and not know about it, and so on. But then, again, he's able to give it the right name, Beis El, instead of Luz, and then he makes his, you know, his neder. But what's particularly fascinating is that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam introduces himself, Vine Hashem Nitzav Alav Vayomar, in the Chalom, Ani Hashem Elokei Avram Avicha Velokei Yitzchak. And if you look throughout the Parsha, Parshas Vayetze, again, this is my suggestion, some of the Mepharshim make note of some of it, a little bit. Barbanel speaks about Avram Avicha, sort of the Sfarno. They say part of this, but they don't say it all fully. The development or the odyssey of Yaakov, who of course is Yisrael, can be traced by his identification, you know, with his two avos, with his real father, and of course with his grandfather Avram Avinu. So he starts off as a Yitzchak persona, I say, an Ishtam Yoshev Ahalim, without the, you know, dramatic part, but with the single-mindedness, the focus, and so on, the Nechbal HaKelim part. That's why it's hard for him to leave. When the Rabbeinu Shalom affirms that this is his new destiny, so he tells him, Ani Hashem Elokei Avraham Avicha. As if to say to him, this is the time for you to develop the Avraham part of your personality. Which means that you have to go out, so you have to be in Chutz Laaretz for a while, you have to encounter other challenges, in Lavan Garti, right? That is all going to be part of the education of Yaakov, who will end up being Yisrael, Tiferes, Kisarisan Malkim Anashim Batuchal, the Shiluv of Gevura and Chesed, of Benon Lamakom, Benon Lachavero, and so on. And that continues in Parshas Vayetze, references to Elokei, for Avram or Avram and Yitzchak. Avram is the primary role model, or it's shared with Yitzchak, until the very end of the parsha, when we're told that, you know, Yaakov has stayed a little bit too long, and he knows that Pnei Lavan is not Imo Kitmol Shilshom, which Chazal interpret in opposite ways. Lavan isn't looking at him the same way, he's not looking at Lavan the same way. Not only is their relationship soured in both directions in a certain sense, but as the Darshanim explain, he doesn't feel the same level of recoil that he should, with Lavan. Lavan doesn't feel uncomfortable in his presence, which was a reflection of how different they were. He's dreaming about, Tzon instead of dreaming about Sulam Mutzav Arza. And that's when the Torah shifts into when the Rabbeinu Shalom introduces himself here, when it's time for him to go, it's Elokei Avicha Yitzchak. And especially in the end of the Parsha, when Lavan wants to make a pact with Yaakov, so he introduces it by saying, I've mentioned this in the past, I think it's very powerful, Elokei Avram, Elokei Nachar, Yishbetu Beinenu, Elokei Avihem, and then the Torah says, Vayishava Yaakov, Bepachad of Yitzchak. And that's kind of where the circle is completed, and where his self-identification is now back to the Yitzchak side of things, and he returns to Eretz Yisrael, and he's ready now to confront Esav from a position of strength. And he's able to see Esav coming in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefanav, El Esav Achiv Artaser Sne Adom. Right, and he has a multiple method of dealing with him, which we'll discuss another time. Imlavan Garti VeEcharadata, which Chazal say Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti. But he also is able to anticipate, instead of just experiencing the Malachim in a reconstruction after the fact, he's able to see them in advance, and to define it as a double machana, machanai. So a little piece that is critical in the transition of Yaakov Avinu, there are two pieces that are critical. One, of course, is in Parshas Toldos, and that is the double struggle over the Bechora and the Brachos. And the other one is the story of Vayachalom Bnei Sulam Mutzav Arza, Birosho Magia Hashemayim. The Barbanel has quotes about nine different Perushim. Three of them come out of the Rambam and Mor Nevuchim to explain the story of Sulam Mutzav Arza, Birosho Magia Hashemayim. We're not going to go through the nine. They're quite a range in terms of what they are: theological things, very pragmatic things, very fascinating. A lot of interesting things to talk about. But his own suggested pshat is that the chalom of Sulam Mutzav Arza, Rosha Magia Shemaima is a function of Yaakov's continuing discomfort, right, with the role that he played in the story of the Brachos, at minimum, if not also the story of the Bechorah. He's very bothered by, he says, all the pshatim that are given about Sulam Mutzav Arza, Rosha Magia Shemaima, which could still be very, obviously, Elu Ve'elu, but not only that, but even in light of his objections, he said the timing doesn't make any sense. In other words, what does it have to do with this particular context, at this moment and at this place, in history? If it's all about, some theological truth or some analytical truth, or some prophetic truth, or some life lesson about how to integrate spirituality and materialism, right, and so on, right? Different ways of understanding the symbol. Obviously, it's a powerful symbol of Sulam Mutzav Arza V'Rosho Magia Shemaima, right? V'Hashem Elokim Nitzav Alav. But he says, whatever it is, why at this moment? Therefore, he says a remarkable thing. He says, you be the judge, my reader, whether or not I didn't hit a home run on this. So what is this pshat? That Yaakov, Omer Sheyakov mipachado mina Esav, sheyahargu. Number one, he still was insecure. He was worried for his life, for his safety. But more importantly, the reason that he was worried is because he had self-doubt as to whether he had done the right thing, whether he had behaved appropriately in the whole story of the brachos, maybe also the bechorah. Ulai kvar hayam bischaret, perhaps he was already regretting, right? Mimasha sikein atzmo bilekichas habrachos. Ba'amro shemale yashar be'enei ho'elokim, right? Masha salachiv, v'yavio alav klala v'lo bracha. L'chein sive v'yisbarach b'yasa l'oso mokom b'hara moriya v'she'alun shama v'hera'oso b'chalomo b'nevuah alokim v'kiyum abrachos asher bircho aviv b'cho b'zaro sh'ratz alokim esma'asa v'yivticho sh'lo yifached me'esav ki'u yatzileo mimenu u'lefi sh'hayu ha'yudim ha'alokim sh'yad ha'kadosh baruch hu la'avram gimel sugim dveikus ha'ashkacha v'ashefa bo b'zaro Yerusha Sa'aretz HaKnosha, V'ribui Zaro, and then he goes on to explain how all of those are implied in the Sulam Mutzav Arts of Rosh HaMagia Shemaima. Those are the things that he was worried about, his capacity to be a real Oved Hashem, to have a kesher with the Ribbono Shel Olam, his connection to Eretz Yisrael, and his status as a father of the nation. So the Sulam Mutzav Arza, right, was to reassure him that, you know, all of that was intact, all of that was not in any kind of danger, and it was kind of a reinforcement or a reaffirmation that his behavior was acceptable. Acceptable because, you know, he had to, desperate times call for desperate measures, or acceptable because even the chatchila, right, this was the right thing, you know, to do. So this, of course, depends very much on the Mefarshim in Parshas Toldos, understanding, in other words, how or what really was going on with the Bechorah and with the Bracha. So I want to take a few minutes to discuss that aspect of it as well. So, again, we're This pshat of the Barbanel, that the Sulam Mutzav Arza is a response to his, you know, self-doubt, is accentuated by other Mefarshim too, who even see the Sulam Mutzav Arza as kind of a critique. Now, Barbanel doesn't see it that way, of his behavior. Yeah?
That thing is good, but maybe it should or would also relate to the beginning of this coming week's Parsha about the Mechlokas and Mefarshim, about whether Yaakov sending out, you know,
yeah. Whether the self-abnegation, you know, was a good thing or a bad thing. Very parallel to this, all the different views in Chazal. And, you know, what do you make of this triple, you know, methodology, you know, of Ludoro, the Tefillah, and Lemochama? 100%. I think there's a parallel there. So, again, there, you know, as is well known, the Abarbanel is basically saying, he's not telling you lechatchila b'diavad, you know, eis lasos Hashem efer Torah secha, or it was all his, you know, rights to begin with, and were even more. Does he have to do it nebuch, or, you know, or, yeah, this was in a more assertive way the right thing to do, even the moral thing to do given the reality. Barbanel doesn't take a stance on that, but he certainly thinks that the Sulam Mutzav Arza was intended to not placate him, but to, you know, to assuage his guilt and to, you know, to inject confidence in him. Others think that in Ochanami this is connected, but that psychologically and otherwise, what he was dreaming in the Sulam Mutzav Arza was part of the critique of, you know, his, you know, behavior. And even if what he did was right, as if to reinforce that he shouldn't be so comfortable with it. And indeed, even more pointedly, of course, in the in Lavan's behavior and his switching of Rachel and Leah, and then later his cheating him, you know, all sorts of creative different ways, you know, financially, and in the way that they part company. So there are numerous statements in Chazal, and in some of them Farshim, Ki'ilu, these are, you know, things that Yaakov, you know, deserved. As if, you know, he need to neutralize, in some respect, his behavior vis-a-vis Esav. Again, because it was wrong, or because even if it was right, it was only right, you know, for emergency reasons, but, you know, kind of left its mark because it was not ideal, even given the context. And that left a certain blight, you know, that Yaakov needed to answer for. And therefore, again, in the accusation of Lavan or Leah, like, you know, how could you do this? You know, you get this very poignant, very powerful, you know, response. What do you mean, how could I do this? You know, coming from somebody, you know, Akveni, you know, Pamayim, and so on. There are different views of Chazal regarding all this. Different matters a lot. How we understand, you know, Yaakov's approach to this whole problem, both to the Bechorah and to the Brachos, and of course they might be related as well. So let's spend a few minutes on that. So at the beginning of the Parsha of Toldos, we have this story about the Bechorah, and as some of them Farshim note, there are seemingly some superfluous words there as well. Nichra kayom, hine anochi holeich lamus, v'lama zali b'charat. That you have the whole quixotic chapter of introduced by Vayev Yitzhak Asesav Kitzayin Befiv, v'rifko heves as Yaakov, that's background, and then v'yozed Yaakov nazid, v'yamo Esav min asadeh, v'hu ayef, v'yomer Esav al Yaakov, v'alitenina min adom adom azeh, v'yof ayef anochi, and so on. Vayomer Yaakov, Nichra Kayom, strange usage, Es Bechorah Skali, and Esav says, Hine Anochi Aleich Lamus, Lama Zali Bechorah, and then also very peculiar, Vayomer Yaakov, Hishavali Kayom, Vayishavalo, what role is the Shavua playing? Vayimgars Bechorah Soli Yaakov, Vayakov Nasal Esav Lechem Unizida Tashim, Vayakov Ayesh, Vayakov Ayelak, and then Vayivez Esav Sa Bechorah, of course in the last words of this part of the Parsha. So the question is, what really is going on? And we really do have different views. So really there are three questions. One is, who is the real Bechor? Because that matters a lot in terms of the selling of the Bechorah and possibly even the Brachos. Secondly, is a Bechorah, and by extension possibly Brachos, something that are nitan levitur, they're subject to being waved away or relinquished. And then, of course, the issue that we've been discussing, in which there clearly is ambivalence of Yaakov Avinu and different views of Chazal, and that is the ethical question, is even with, you know, everything, you know, that you know, all the counter pressure considered, is there really an ethical problem in terms of what Yaakov Avinu did? We say, titein emes li Yaakov. We associate the midah of emes with Yaakov. And while, this is not the time to analyze this fully, but the word emes doesn't always accord or coincide with truth in the more technical sense. It refers to a bigger truth. Emes often really means integrity, in my opinion, rather than truth and falsehood. Just that in, you know, 97% of cases, or 99 or 93, I don't know, you know, a dishonesty or falsehood is a lack of integrity, and truth is an expression of integrity. But we know in terms of you know, a shalom bias, you know, kind of a lie, sometimes telling the truth, you know, you can tell the truth, and that's, you can kill people with the truth, right? You can be motzi shemra in a way that is totally inappropriate as well. You don't get points for honesty when you do that. There can be cases of honesty that are destructive and that are not an expression of emes in the bigger sense, in the sense of chotamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes. And there can be cases where technically you say something false, but, you know, in a bigger picture, you're telling the truth. You know, kalav na v'chasuda. Not only for shalom bayis, but because in a bigger sense, it is always practically the truth, meaning in a wider understanding, not in a narrower understanding. So MS means integrity. It means behaving properly given the pressures, the counter-pressures, the bigger picture. Just that, again, I don't want to leave a wrong impression here. Almost always that means to tell the truth. And almost always lying is an egregious violation of that. Here and there, there are going to be some exceptions. We speak about midvar sheker tirchak, and the Gemara in Shavuah says, you know, several limudim. It's clear that it has nothing, it's not limited to telling the truth or telling a lie, right? Sometimes you're misrachek, you know, mina emes, not necessarily mishaker, but maybe even mishaker, but certainly misrachek mina emes when you're telling the truth. Just that you're doing it in a way which violates, you know, the principles that make truth telling important and significant. So the question then is, what about Yaakov and Esav? My time's almost up, so I guess I have to finish next week. But let me just begin. So the first question is, who was the real Bechor? And that's just an interesting halachic question, too. So Rashi, in his Perush Al HaTorah, Al HaTar, quotes the Chazal, that in some respects, you know, Yaakov Avinu, you know, was trying so hard, you know, to get to emerge, you know, into the light of the world, you know, before Esav, and the reason that he was doing that is because he felt that he was really the real Bechor. Right, Vayetzar Rishon Admoni Kulo Kaderes Sear, Vayikushu Esav Ve'Achrachen Yatzakiv Yado Chezes Va'Kei Ve'Esav. Obviously, by Shemo Yaakov. So Rashi tells the story here that if you Yaakov notes mitipa rishona, the Esav min hashniya, tseolamad mishpoferes shapia k'tzara, tein ba shtei avanim zu tachazu hanekneses rishona teitzei achrona, and the kneses achrona teitzei rishona. Now Rashi only says this to explain nimtza. Esav hanotzer b'achrona yatzar rishon v'Yaakov shenotzer rishona yatzar achron v'Yaakov bala akpo shehi rishon l'leda k'rishon l'yitzira v'yiftar esrachma v'yitos ha'b'chorim ben adin. But obviously Rashi's view is that this is legally either insignificant or not significant enough, but it explains, you know, in terms of the mentality of Yaakov. Maybe it implies that there's an aspect of b'chora, you know, to somebody who's the Tipa Rishona, who's the first in the Yitzira, or in the Herayon, not just in the Leida. Maybe that's part of the story of why it is that, you know, he had this sense of destiny, and maybe it did give him some partial stature, but certainly not sufficient. But what's fascinating is that the Gra, in a different context, suggests that when it comes to Bechor L'Nachala, at least, I'll just make this point and we'll stop. When it comes to Bechor L'Nachala, that Tipa Rishona really does have a status. In Parshas Kiteitze, the Gra Kedarko, you know, only the Gra could do this, has an interesting diuk in the Psukim. Torah says after the story of Mifas Toar and Ben Sorer, that context, so if you look carefully at the psukim, says the Gra, it's v'yoldulo ha'ahuva v'hasnua. In the Leda, the ahuva is mentioned first, and then it says v'haya ha'ben ha'bechor lasnia, but the bechor belongs to the snia, not to the ahuva. But we just said that the Leda was at least the order. So the Gra, I say only the Gra could really, you know, come up with something like this. You know, the Gra says, what this tells us is v'haya b'yaman chilo es banavas ha'sheyelo lo yuchal v'akers ben ahuva p'nei asnoa ha'bechor Kesavakor ben Asniya Yakir, that basically the idea is that the Tipa Rishona, the Yitzira, is Koveya with regard to Bechor. And that's why the Ben Asniya, was not Nolad Rishon, but the Horaz Rishon. So one of the Bali Tosas Al HaTorah suggests that this is part of the story of Yaakov and Esav against the Rashi. Okay. The problem is that most seem to accept Rashi. What do you do with this Gra and so on? Oh, I'm going to have to stop. So we'll continue with this analysis. We're in the middle of these.